So we have been continuing in our study of James on Sunday morning and the fruit of the Spirit on Wednesday night. And the plan was to continue that. And then midweek, the elders asked me if I would mind doing something a little different. And I am happy to do that, happy to accommodate, because I think it is needful. Just to be honest, it's been kind of a wild year. I'm pretty sure it rained every day in January and February. Our yard is still wet, I believe, from all that. Someone at the time posted on what's happening in Moody, if y'all hadn't been messing with the Lord's chicken and going to Popeye's instead, it wouldn't have happened. But you know the Popeye's Chick-fil-A battle. On March 15th, Rebecca sent me a text and let me know that I'd have to do something else about my Monday night community study because the dining room at Chick-fil-A would be closing, and that is when, at least for most of us, that Monday, March 16th, is when everything began to close, and we'd spend about the next 2 months in quarantine due to our beloved Rona, as we like to sometimes call it. This has affected jobs, it's affected income, it's affected the ability to be with loved ones. People have had funerals that they couldn't be with their families. And that's been hard. It's changed the way churches have met, shut down the country for about 2 months. And then also this year, beginning in February, February 23rd, a man by the name Ahmaud Arbery was out for a jog and was killed. March 13th, a lady by the name of Breonna Taylor was killed in her own home. And then most recently on May 25th, a man by the name of George Floyd was killed. And these killings involved, at best, questionable judgment, but most likely completely unjust actions. And that's upset people, as it should. It's been something that's been on our minds. It's raised a number of protests. Most of these protests have been peaceful in nature, but many of them haven't. There's been rioting, there's been looting, there's been assault and violence. And there's been others that were killed unjustly. I think one thing that's kind of been important for me to think about is this is probably the closest to home it's ever been. Usually when you think of these kind of protests, it's New York, D.C., Chicago, L.A. Not 20 miles west of here where these things are happening. And then this past Tuesday night, Amanda called about almost 10 o'clock and said that a Moody police officer had been shot and Richard had been called out to go deal with the situation. They had done an all-call for all the police in the area. That man passed, and I believe his visitation is today, the funeral tomorrow. On top of all of this, we've had our normal struggles, right? Work, bills, temptation, trials, regular sickness. Every time you sneeze or cough in public, people look at you like you're going to kill everybody, right? And so there's been all of this added drama, the need to also set an example. The need to love our neighbors, to avoid trouble, to resist temptation, and then find a way, some way or another in the midst of all this, to talk to your kids about it, which has been troubling. How are we supposed to respond to all this? How are we supposed to be people of joy in the midst of chaos? How could Paul, in the book of Philippians, speak of rejoicing while he sat in prison? How could Peter speak of the need to honor the king while that king, that emperor, was Nero and was persecuting Christians? and maybe closer to what's going on now in the aftermath of thieves, murderers, and natural disaster, how on earth could Job say, "Naked I came from my mother's womb, naked I shall return, the Lord gives and the Lord takes away, blessed be the name of the Lord"? How can we have those attitudes? Because, ladies and gentlemen, we know that God is still on His throne. And as bad as everything gets, as crazy as everything looks, as fearful as we might become, as sick as we might get, or as quickly as we might die, God is still on His throne. Please take your Bibles and open up to the second psalm. It is this psalm that we are going to spend our time in this morning, because it talks about the chaos that Satan brings into the world, that Satan can introduce through enemies, and then how we ought to look at it. So what I want to think about this morning is we have this world that, as David said, Paul uses the phrase over in 1 Corinthians, this present distress. We have a present distress in our world. There's a lot going on. So how are we to view our troubled world? And it's with the idea that God is on His throne. God is still in control. When Amanda called Tuesday night, the two older kids were still up. I had them come into the bedroom, and we prayed at that moment. We prayed for Brother Richard as he was going out, and we prayed for the life of the officer. We didn't know who it was at the time. And they were pretty upset because so much has been going on. And I just told them, "I know it's scary, but God's still in control." That's what we have to understand. Read this psalm with me. This psalm that very clearly makes the point that God is in control. "Why do the nations rage and the peoples plot in vain? The kings of the earth set themselves and the rulers take counsel together against the Lord and against His anointed, saying, 'Let us burst their bonds apart and cast away their cords from us.' He who sits in the heavens laughs. He holds them in derision. Then He will speak to them in His wrath and terrify them in His fury, saying, 'As for me, I have set my king on Zion, my holy hill. I will tell of the decree. The Lord said to me, "You are my son. Today I have begotten you. Ask of me, and I will make the nations your heritage and the ends of the earth your possession. You shall break them with a rod of iron and dash them in pieces like a potter's vessel. Now therefore, O kings, be wise. Be warned, O rulers of the earth. Serve the Lord with fear and rejoice with trembling. Kiss the Son, lest He be angry and you perish in the way. For His wrath is quickly kindled. Blessed are all who take refuge in Him." Well, let's think for a moment about what's happening in the world. There is an all-out offensive against God. I think Satan is the one orchestrating this, however he does that. We often, humans, wind up being his henchmen. But he incites us against God. In the original context, this is speaking of the nations around Israel. Israel is God's chosen nation, and it's the Moabites and the Ammonites and the Edomites and the Philistines and the people of Tyre and Sidon. And they're fighting against Israel in a physical sense. The term plot that's used here, it's the same word that's used up in Psalm 1 to talk about meditating in the law day and night. We think about, we dwell on the law, and then we act on it. And so this is premeditated. Their rebellion is premeditated. The kings of the earth set themselves and the rulers take counsel together. Everybody's working together, but not for the right reasons. They're doing this to fight against the Lord and against His anointed. In their rebellion, they understand that God has law and order, that God has put things into place. That's the way it's always been. From creation, there were certain things that organized mankind. God said, here's one man and one woman. You're going to be married, and you're going to do so for life. And then he says, here's the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Don't eat it. There's rules there. After the flood, God said, whoever sheds man by man shall his blood be shed. And so there's always been law and order. There's always been rule. Romans 1 talks about the implied laws of nature. There are just certain things that nature teaches us. And one of the examples he uses in Romans 1 is that men are to be with women and women with men. Yet man wants to live and do as he pleases. We look at God's rules and we think, well, God just doesn't want us to have any fun. We feel that the laws are too restrictive. They violate our desires and our pleasures. And we ultimately just view God's rule as bondage. And what a shame that we view the Creator's desires for us as holding us back and holding us down. And so the people say, let us burst their bonds apart and cast away their cords from us. God can't tell us what to do. Mankind has been rebelling ever since creation. Mankind was rebelling in the days of David, and they are on the offensive today. I'm not going to get on a soapbox here. You know the list just as well as I do. We take prayer out of school. And what's funny is we always start there and forget that there was a day and time when they were actually reading the Bible in school as well. I remember my father talking about that growing up. They read the Bible every day at school. Good luck with that now. We're homeschooled. We can do that. The removal of 10 commandments from courtrooms. The assault against men and male leadership in our society, trying to feminize men. Not allowed to say Merry Christmas because it has religious overtones. In 2014, I had a note about this. I wondered if I'd ever use it. It came up this week. In 2014, Kendra Turner, a student in Charlotte, North Carolina, was suspended from school for saying bless you after someone sneezed. You all know about the Sweet Cakes Bakery in Oregon, what they've been through. To stand against certain sins and to stand for almost anything at all is to invite persecution. It is to invite violence sometimes. It is to invite harassment and even lawsuit. That's what's going on in the world. And we look around at that and, boy, that makes us a little nervous. We wonder, are we going to be able to stay faithful? Are we going to be able to keep worshiping God as we know we need to? And oftentimes our first response is one of fear. But we need to look and see what's happening in heaven. Because this world is not the be-all, end-all. This world, in fact, is not our home. And so what is happening in heaven here? We should really like the confidence of God here. Because while man is doing all this, man is going out of his way to fight against God. God is in the heaven and he laughs. It's like when your little kid comes and they want to wrestle. Charlie likes to wrestle. He wants me to throw him around on the bed. And he stands up on the bed and does this. Now he's getting to where he can throw a pretty good punch. And if he hits me in the solar plexus, it's probably going to hurt. But at the same time, if it were a real fight, what would I do? I'd just laugh. You do this number, right? And let them swing under your arms, you know? That's God's response. Is the Creator of this world really going to be intimidated by the silly plans and the feeble attack of men? No. And so when we do this kind of thing, verse 4, he who sits in the heavens laughs. The Lord holds them in derision. Think about this. Think about God, the Creator, Sustainer, Judge, often Executioner. versus the instigators of rioting and looting and injustice. That doesn't slow God down. That doesn't stop Him. That doesn't scare Him. That doesn't keep Him from being in control. He who sits in the heavens laughs. And while it's almost silly and comical to think about that, it's also an insult to God. And God understands that. In verse 5, then He will speak to them in His wrath and terrify them in His fury. You remember when God was speaking to the people at Mount Zion? The people of Israel heard God's voice, and God wasn't angry with them. God was actually very pleased with them. God was starting a relationship with them. And yet the sound of His voice terrified them so much that they tell Moses, "You go talk to Him. If we hear from Him again, we're going to die." That's when God is speaking kindly and in a relationship. What happens when God speaks angrily? When God speaks, mountains quake and the earth trembles. Now what about when God is angry? How does God respond to these people? The Bible always talks about God's unexpected ways. The language that Paul uses is that the foolishness of God is better than the wisdom of man. The picture in the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ is victory through death, exaltation through humility. So what is God going to do to fight against the schemes of man? Surely He's got a good plan, right? Surely He's got the answer to all of these problems. And you know what He does? Is He sets His king on one of the smallest mountains you'll ever find in your life. This little hill called Zion, in this little city of Jerusalem, in this little country of Israel. Have you ever looked at Israel on a full-size map and how completely small and seemingly insignificant it is? Well, take a small city in that country, take a small little hill called Zion, and God says, "I've put my king there. That's what I've done." And we're like, "Oh boy, we're in trouble." Because we think we need guns, right? And we need planes and ships and all of these kind of things to save us. Surely there are better mountains. Even in Israel, there are better mountains. Hermon up north is a better mountain. God, why don't you at least move this plan to a better mountain? You remember when Elisha told Naaman to go dip in the Jordan River? What did he say? "Are there not better rivers in Syria? Isn't there somewhere better I could go? And if I'm going to do this simple thing of dipping in the water, so at least let me do it in a nice river. The Jordan River, certain times of the year, you can jump over the Jordan River. Where we're from, that's not called a river. That's a creek or crick, depending on where you're from. And yet, it is because God said to do this that it is beneficial. It's not the mountain that matters. It's the one making the plan that matters. A.J. Motyer says this. I love this. "The Lord neither negotiates with rebels nor adjusts Himself to suit their demands. He simply reaffirms His royal plan." God doesn't even change tactics. God just does what He's always done. He says, "I have set my king on Zion. I've already done it. I've already enacted the plan, and nothing is going to affect it." That's the God we serve. When something happens, what's the joke? You want to make God laugh? Tell Him your plans. Stuff's changing all the time. We should have been talking in James 4 this morning about, "Come now, you who say, let's go into such and such a city and buy and sell and make trade. But your life is but a mist. It is but a vapor." We'll talk about it next week. We'll just combine this week's and next week's lesson. Short lesson anyway. And the idea is that things happen, things change. And what do? We have to adjust. We have to adapt. Not God. God is in charge. God has power. God says, this is what I've done. Good luck changing that. I have set my king on Zion. Well, let's talk about this king for just a moment. This psalm seems to have been a coronation psalm. As the new king was anointed, as the new king was led to his throne and took his rule, they would have read a psalm like Psalm 2. You can also look at Psalm 45, more of a royal wedding psalm. But here the king is anointed and enthroned. And here we read the relationship of God with the king. He is like a son to him. And of course, we think about David and we think about Solomon. However, in verse 7, we read this phrase, I tell of the decree, the Lord said to me, you are my son, today I have begotten you. Paul's going to use this verse in Acts 13 to talk about the resurrection. The resurrection of Jesus. As God brings his actual son forth from the grave and set him on the throne. So it's not like he's a son. No, God says of Jesus, today you are my son, I have begotten you. The idea of his resurrection and his coming to his throne. Verse 8, ask of me and I will make the nations your heritage and the ends of the earth your possession. What about the king's authority here? You know how the book of Matthew ends? Matthew 28, all authority has been given to me in heaven and on earth. This is not just a king, ladies and gentlemen. This is the king. The king of kings, Lord of lords, is the phrase that Paul uses of him in the letter to Timothy. And then verse 9, you shall break them with a rod of iron and dash them in pieces like a potter's vessel. That's the authority and the power of the king to squelch any riot, any rebellion, the language that we are used to right now, any protest against his rule. So the king is on his throne. How should the world respond? We know things look bad right now. Things are scary. Things are intimidating. People aren't behaving the way they should. From politicians down to everybody else. When have politicians ever behaved the way they should? But we have politicians. We have some policemen. We have some citizens. We have some who claim to be Christians. And there's people all over this spectrum that are not living as they should. And then, of course, there's others out there who are striving to cause chaos. How do we respond when it appears Satan is about to win? We have to remember that God is reigning, and he laughs at their silliness, and he warns them. Now, therefore, O kings, be wise. Don't be foolish here. It's always like when a child is about to get in trouble and you can see the ticker in their eyeballs. You know the news ticker that you can read what your kids are about to do. So some of you aren't getting what I'm saying here. When Lillian was very little, she was rather adventurous. And she was standing on our bed and she was watching the fan spin. And she had a belt in her hand. And I said, don't you dare try and hook that belt to the fan. And she looked at me like, you're a witch. How did you know that? You know what your kids are thinking. And when they're about to get in trouble and you can see the thing across their eyes that says, run for it. And you say, don't even think about it. That's what God is saying here. Now therefore, O kings, be wise. Be warned, O rulers of the earth. Don't be afraid. Ladies and gentlemen, don't be disheartened. Okay, Jonathan, Well, then what do we do? Verse 11. Serve the Lord with fear and rejoice with trembling. A couple weeks ago, I put out a video on Hebrew poetry. And I know I talked about some technical things there. It's going to come back up this next quarter as we get ready to talk about Proverbs. But I want you to notice the parallelism in this verse here. The first line, serve the Lord with fear. The second line matches it, rejoice with trembling. So you obviously understand that fear and trembling match up. What that implies is that serve the Lord and rejoice match up. And why is that important? Because earlier in the psalm, people were saying, to serve the Lord is bondage. To serve the Lord is like we have handcuffs on. And he says, no, it's not. Not at all. We serve the Lord and we rejoice as we do it because He's the King. He's the one in charge. We serve the Lord with fear. We rejoice with trembling. We need to find joy in serving the Lord. Knowing that we are serving a higher power, a higher cause. Something that goes beyond this world. Verse 12, obviously you shouldn't fight against Him. Obviously we shouldn't rebel. Kiss the Son, lest He be angry and you perish in the way. Remember who the Son is. The Son's the one on the throne. The Son's the King. And you see it, you know, in movies and shows and books and stuff, the king holds out his hand. And anybody who submits to the king bows before him and kisses his ring. And that's the picture that we have here. Here is the Son. He's sitting on the throne. He's the king. Let me advise you people, the psalmist says, you had best kiss the Son. Submit to Him, lest He be angry and you perish in the way. For His wrath is quickly kindled. That's interesting that it says that, because out throughout the Old Testament, we also read the phrase that God is slow to anger and abounding in steadfast love. What's the difference? Why is God sometimes slow to anger? And why is His anger sometimes quickly kindled? Who is it quickly kindled against? Those who are in open rebellion to Him. God does not stand for that. Now, our slips and falls and mistakes, God is so gracious and so merciful. Thank Him, right, for that. But when we stand in open rebellion against God, He won't have it. And finally, our response when everything seems to be falling down, when we're scared because people are talking about defunding the police, and there's riots 20 miles away, when a police officer is shot and killed less than 2 miles from your home, when you are scared, what do we do? Look at the last phrase of this psalm. Blessed are all who take refuge in Him. When the world loads its guns, sharpens its sword, and prepares to fight against God, when everything seems to be crashing down around us, when it seems like Satan has taken the assault to us, God is our shield. God is our rock. God is our refuge. And God is our victory. This has long been one of my favorite psalms. I love the intricacies in the psalm. I like the way that Paul uses it over in the New Testament. There's a lot going on in this psalm, and I really like it. And it's a psalm that gives us great comfort. The words that I use here, God is our shield, our rock, our refuge, and our victory or our victor. Not that victor. Search through the psalms and see how often those four terms are used of God, especially as our shield and our rock. When everything is crashing down around us, we run to the King. We run to our Lord. We run to our God. And we let Him deal with it. Why do we let Him deal with it? Because Jesus said in John 16 at verse 33, in this world you will have tribulation, but take heart, I have overcome the world. Thank God, right? Not only do we need Christ's victory against the world, we need His victory against sin. Well, the question then might be, how do we take refuge in King Jesus? We don't often think about it like that, do we? We usually say Jesus Christ. You know that means the same thing, though, right? The word Christ or Messiah just means anointed one. Well, who did they anoint? They anointed the King. We serve King Jesus. How do we benefit from His death? How do we benefit from His victory over sin? The New Testament tells us that we need to put on Christ. And we do that through baptism. And it's in baptism that our sins are washed away by the blood of Christ. And we can now put our confidence, our trust, our hope in something better than this world. And that's good news because this world has issues. I think of Abraham in Hebrews 11 at verse 10. Abraham was looking forward to a city that has foundations, whose designer and builder is God. He was going to the promised land. Remember, God calls him up out of Ur of the Chaldees and sends him over to Canaan. Abraham knew there was something better than that. Abraham could sing the song, "This world is not my home." And then in Revelation 21 at verse 4, in that city, He will wipe away every tear from their eyes, and death shall be no more. Neither shall there be mourning, nor crying, nor pain anymore, for the former things have passed away. All the heartache, all the hardships that we've witnessed this year. Guys, it's only June 7th. All the things that we've witnessed, they won't even be there. And that's good news because this world is not our home. So I ask you this morning, the summary of Psalm 2 is don't worry about everything that's going on. God's in control. Serve the Lord. Take refuge in Him. Are you ready to take refuge in Jesus Christ? Are you ready to give Him your life in faith and obedience? Are you ready to serve the Lord? Are you ready to kiss the Son and seek safety from Him? If you are, let us know.